Friends, it is my honor and privilege to introduce your mentor and mine, Dr. John C. Maxwell. John?
Hey, thanks, Tracy, and all of you on the MIM Club. I'm so glad to be able to have again our time together this month. It's just always a privilege for me to come and be with you on this call. It's always an honor, and it's always with a great sense of anticipation what I'm going to share, because I think that what I'm going to share again today is going to add value to you. And that's why we really come together every month. Tracy, you're exactly right. We need to maximize the calls by not only getting on them, but then taking the notes and then, going back and reviewing those and reflecting on them. You just really want to get the best out of the best. And that's our desire. And so I'm delighted to be with you today. And our lessons are on confidence. And the title is a longer title than normal for me, but it's kind of descriptive of where we're going to go. Confidence is a result, but courage is a choice. Most people that know me look at me as a very secure, confident person, and I think I am. I'm very comfortable in my own skin. And I've watched people who did not have confidence, and for so many years, Tracy, I used to look at them, and I would say, oh my gosh, I just wish I could give them my confidence. And, of course, I can't do that, but I'd kind of wistfully say, boy, if I could just give them my confidence, I think that they would, kind of venture out and they would do this. And one day I realized that, the old expression, you put the cart before the horse. One day I realized that what I really want to be able to help people achieve is not confidence, but courage. That if they can have the courage to do and act and apply through that exercise and through that experience, they'll really gain confidence. You don't gain confidence by thinking about it or hoping for it or planning about it. You gain confidence but by doing something, and you only do things if you have the courage. And so really, when you think about it, the greatest value of courage is that it gives you confidence. If you're courageous and you act on something, you do it, and all of a sudden you come away from that and say, oh my gosh, I did it. And you begin to feel good about yourself. You begin to feel good about what you're trying to accomplish. And so it's kind of like courage is the forerunner of confidence. And then when you get more confidence, as you do, it gives you more courage. And honestly, it's a cycle. It's almost like a chicken and the egg, only the courage comes first. But when you get courageous, then you begin to get confident. And when you get confident, you even get more courageous, which gives you more confidence. And it really begins to escalate, and it begins to truly build. And so what I'm saying is, I can't talk you into confidence, but I can walk you into confidence. And the first statement I want to make sure that we all grab is this one. That is, you can't fake confidence. You have to make confidence. There's a difference. And so the people who kind of say, well, just act as if you're confident, doesn't work, folks, because you're not. Or fake it till you make it. Doesn't work. You can't fake confidence. You got to make confidence. And I want in this lesson to really talk to you about how to do that, because I know a lot of you, as you're listening and with me right now, you're saying to yourself, man, I'd like to have more confidence. Or you're thinking about people on your team that you would love to instill confidence in. And I think we've focused on confidence and not on courage. And I think that we just kind of need to get the bigger picture. Let me explain it this way. Every day I drive, just like every day you drive. And I'll bet all of us, when we get in our car, I doubt if any of us give ourselves a pep talk and say, okay, my gosh, come on, John. Okay, you're behind the wheel. Okay, you can do this. You can turn on the ignition. Yeah, but you can put it in drive. Yeah, you can hit the gas pedal. No. We've done this for a long time, and we just go to the car very confident that we're where we are in point A, we can get to point B. Now the reason we're so confident is because we've done this thousands and thousands and thousands of times. But my granddaughters, Maddie and Hannah, that they're 18, 17, and in the last year and a half, they've been learning how to drive. And my gosh, when I look at them, they're not confident at all in the beginning. And in fact, when the first time I was with them, they, instead of trying to focus on, what they could do or should do, they were basically focusing on, you know, where not to drive. You know, don't cross the middle lane. Don't go off in the ditch. And you know, they're just kind of white knuckling it all the way through and just hoping that they don't have a wreck. In fact, okay, I'm going to make a confession to you that even their parents don't know, and that is that I asked to go in the car alone with them. And they let me, and so I got them in a little strip, a little flat area. It was very, you know, just flat where there really weren't any cars. And so I just said to Maddie, I said that, you know, each time in the hand, I just said, let's just practice driving off the road. And they said, what do you mean, Papa? I said, well, let's just, you know, just take the car off the road here. And it was flat. I mean, it wasn't like a ditch or a cliff, obviously. And they, you know, they kind of looked at it. I said, no, you just need to know that you can go off the road and you can pull it back on the road. And you know, you're going to go off the road. Everybody goes off the road. I go off the road. And I just kind of began to work on the things that, you know, they were just so negative. I don't want to cross the, you know, middle line. I want to do this. And obviously they want to be safe. But I was just trying to help them understand that you know, they got to get a little bit of experience under their belt, even maybe some bad experiences. But then I shared with them, as I was watching them so intent about what they were doing right now and what's right in front of the car, right in front of them. And I said to them, I said, look, set your sights on, you know, get a little bit longer range view. Look out there a little farther. Set your sights on where you're going rather than kind of where you are. You know, in driver's education, that's called high aim driving. Basically, you just drive better if you look down the road a little bit further. And high, there's also high aim living. And high aim living is where we begin to focus on where we're going more than really where we are, and have the courage to move and to go so that we can increase the confidence. One of the reasons I love these monthly live calls is I can just talk to you out of experiences that I'm having. In fact, today earlier, just a couple of hours earlier, I was on a mentoring call. There's a highly, just a very, very successful young leader that I've kind of poured myself into for the last couple of years. And so we meet periodically on the phone, and I mentor him. And one of the items on his agenda today was stress. And he basically asked me, you know, talk to me about handling stress. And I shared with him, I said, you know, this is really one of my, you know, one of my strengths. I've got a lot of weaknesses, but one of my strengths is I handle stress really well. So we talked about that, and you know, okay, John, how did you get that place where you were confident that you could handle stress? And I said, well, it really is because I've had a lot of experiences. And to be honest with you, when people, you know, I find them stressed out about a certain situation, very seldom am I stressed out about it at all because, to be honest with you, I've already had experience in those areas, and I've already tried those things, and I've learned what works, what doesn't work. It's like people, like speaking, when people say, John, are you nervous, you know, before you speak? I just was in Vegas the other day, and I spoke to 15,000 live and 15,000 online, and so, you know, are you nervous? Well, no, not really. I'm not a bit nervous. Well, why? Well, I've done this, you know, 12,000 times. What I'm saying to you is that the way to get confidence is to have experience, and the way to have experience is to have courage. So I really want to get practical with you because I want us to get – I really, when I'm done with this teaching, I really want to get a handle on this for all of you. And so let me give you what I call the confidence cycle, because there's a cycle that I want to walk you through and then teach you a little bit about courage and hopefully deposit some stuff in you that will really – you know, add value to you. So let's go. Let's talk about the confidence cycle. At the top of this cycle, just think of the word possibility. And this is where it all begins. You know, you and I begin to see the possibility, and we think to ourselves, maybe I could do this. Maybe I could do this. Would kind of be wonderful, but boy, wouldn't that be great? Maybe I can do this. Well, if you just take that cycle on around, a lot of times that possibility becomes passion. And the more that we say, maybe I could do this, we come to the place where passion begins to take over, and we begin to say, I want to do this. now you can see we're making progress. We're going around the cycle, no question about it. But I can almost promise you, every time you get to the I want to do this, you get to the next part of the cycle, which is the problem. You begin to see all of the problems that just could occur if you do it. And so you go from, you know, maybe I could do this, the possibility, to I want to do this, the passion, to now you're at the problem. And when you look at the problems, you begin to say to yourself, I'm not sure I can do this. All of a sudden, the energy is beginning to leak, and all of a sudden, the passions begin to ebb. Now, what's happening? We're now focused on the problem, and the problem is keeping us from going where we need to go and doing what we need to do. Well, what happens usually when we're confronted with the problem is we just kind of retreat a little bit. And if you're like me, you get to that fourth part of the cycle, which is what I call planning. I now begin to say, okay, well, let me get it down on paper. What does this look like if I really tried to do this? You know, and so I kind of lay it out so I can see it, because that gives me a little bit more confidence that maybe I could proceed and I could go on. Now, that may not work for you, but it does for me. Planning helps me. So now you can see we're just still going around that cycle. The possibility, well, maybe I could do this, to the passion, oh my gosh, I want to do this. So all of a sudden the problems begin to pop up. Man, I'm not really sure I can do this. So we go begin to put it on paper, and we begin to see it. It begins to look like maybe it's workable. We're in that planning stage. Well, the fifth part of that is, as we go around that circle, the fifth part of that cycle is courage. And courage basically says, I will do this. Courage is a commitment. And when I really begin to be filled with courage, all of a sudden I just say to myself, I will do this. And then we get to that last part of the cycle, which is the confidence side part of it. And when we get to the confidence part of it, we now are excited. We say, oh my gosh, I did it. I did it. I did it. Now, how did we get to I did it and feeling good about ourselves and feeling good about what we've done? Well, it came through that whole cycle. Well, maybe I could do this. I want to do this. Oh, gosh, there's some problems. I'm not sure I can do this. Okay. All right, let's put it on paper. Oh, yeah, it looks like it's maybe doable. Okay, I'm going to have the courage. I will do this. And all of a sudden, we do it. And when we do it, that's when we get confidence. Now, here's what I want you to know. Confidence before action in the beginning is just a fake confidence. It's hypey. It won't last, and it certainly won't help you to be succeeding. So, you see, I talk about the question sometimes I ask myself, and before I do a deed or do an act that's going to take courage, you know, okay, I'm on the front end. Okay, I'm on the front end of this cycle. I'm asking myself as I look at something that I maybe need to tackle or should tackle, and well, what do I feel? What do I think? What do I know? Well, what I feel is uncertain about doing this. What do I think is I'm not sure I can do this. Well, what do I know? I don't know anything. All I know right now is I haven't done it. Well, you see, on the before, the front end, when I'm asking those questions, what do I feel? What do I think? What do I know? It isn't getting me where I need to go. But what happens is, if I have courage and I do this, I can go back to that same question. What do I, you know, but I reverse it. See, on the front end, I ask myself, what do I feel? What do I think? What do I know? After I've had courage to do it, it just reverses. What do I know? What do I think? What do I feel? Well, what I know is I did it. Oh, touchdown. What do I think is, well, I think I'm capable. And what do I feel? I feel good about myself. And so just think of that, those questions, as you begin to look at, you know, whatever is in front of you that you got to tackle on the front end. What do I feel? What do I think I know? Well, I don't feel confident. What I think is I may not succeed, and I really don't know how it's going to come out because I haven't tried it. But the moment that I try it, it just turns around. Oh, what do I know? I know I did it. What do I think? I think that I'm glad I did it. And what do I feel? I feel good about myself. So this is just absolutely huge, the moment we begin to come into this place in our life where we begin to say, okay, I'm going to go from, from possibility to passion, work through the problems, plan it out, have some courage, and then I'm going to get confidence. But when do I get confidence? I don't get confidence by talking myself into it or thinking myself into it, or, I get confidence by doing it. And here's so courage is so key. Mm-hmm. Courage is essential for us to be what we want to be in this area of confidence. Now, what courage does for you, for me, is it makes us consistent. Once I become a courageous person, I become much more consistent in my actions because I've overcome that doubt, that fear. And every day you need courage. Every day I need courage to do several things. Every day we need courage to seek the truth, even though that truth may be painful. We need courage to change when it would, be honest with you, just be easier to stay comfortable. We need courage to express convictions when others challenge us. We need courage to overcome obstacles when progress will come no other way but through that way. We need courage to learn and grow even if it's going to display our weak areas. We need courage to take the high road when people treat us badly. We need courage to lead when being out front makes us an easy target. We just need courage. Tracy, I'm thinking about just a couple days ago when you texted me and you were thinking about doing something as a leader that was going to require courage. And you were just asking me what my opinion was. John, what would you do in this situation? And when I had a chance, I gave you a call, and we kind of talked our way through it, and I gave you kind of what I would do, which was by all means a taking a courageous path. And so the next day, Tracy, followed through and did what was a little bit uncomfortable, what she wasn't really sure about. And then, Tracy, you text me back and said, "Oh my gosh, John, it turned out good. In fact, I'm so glad I did it." Well, okay. Let me tell you something. Tracy had a lot more confidence on the back end than she did on the front end. And let me just say something. Confidence is understood on the back end. It's not understood on the front end. So when I say things like everything worthwhile is uphill, well, to go uphill, what do you need? You need courage. And when I talk about leaders, deal with uncertainty. In fact, leaders sometimes lead during uncertainty. Leaders sometimes lead and they're not sure because they've not taken the path before. Well, what's needed? It's courage. Courage is the key. Courage is the key to being confident. That's a fact. So let me just kind of give you some quick thoughts on being courageous. I think that will help you. First of all, you can choose to be courageous. It's a choice. And you all have, I have, we have the power to choose that. You see, courage is the door that can only be opened by you from the inside. In other words, you're on the inside, and what you've got to do is tackle something big and bullish on the outside. And the only way you can do that is to go to that door and open it up and go outside. You've got to open that door. It's a choice. You can choose that. You've got to choose courage in the face of your fears. We've got to talk about this for a moment. In fact, Mark Twain said one time, courage is resistance to fear, master fear, but it's not absence of fear. He's exactly right. So when I run into people and they say, "Well, gosh, I didn't do that because I had some fear," I look at them and say, "Well, we all have fear. I mean, fear is present in my life all the time. Very seldom do I do anything of substantial value that there's not fear in it. Fear is a negative emotion, which basically says don't do it, and faith is a positive emotion that says you should do it. And both faith and fear are present in me all the time. So I don't have courage because I, somehow learned an easy way to get rid of fear, and so I don't have any fear, so I just boldly move. No. I have fear. I have fears every day. I have doubts. I have questions. But I also have faith. And so this choice that I'm talking to you about now is just pretty major. And in fact, you've got to ask yourself, am I going to focus on my faith or am I going to focus on my fear? Am I going to focus on what I could do or am I going to just focus on what I won't do? Because I can tell you, faith is the avenue to courage. Fear shrinks courage. In fact, you fall into your fears and obey them long enough, you'll have no courage at all. But I want you to know that you and I, we both have faith and we both have fear. It's not like I got rid of fear and all of a sudden I became courageous. No. I have fear. You have fear. We all have fear. It's okay. We're not even trying to get rid of fear. We're just trying to feed our faith and starve our doubts. That's what we're trying to do. And that works. That really works and it will work in my life, it'll work in your life. So the way to feed that faith and make it larger, and by the way, when you feed one emotion, it minimizes and reduces the other emotion. So if I feed my fears, what it does is it begins to starve my faith. If I feed my faith, it begins to starve my doubts and my fears. So what you've got to do to feed your faith is to focus on what you're going to gain. You see, fear causes us to focus on what we'll lose. Well, my gosh, if I do that, there could be some real negative. Okay, fear causes us to focus on what we will lose, and courage helps you to focus on what you will gain. And so what we need to do is, again, we need to put our time and energy on focusing on our faith, which will feed and give us courage. Because what courage does, the moment that I'm courageous, courage gives me experience. I can't have experience without it. If I let my fears dominate, I won't try. So fear gives me experience. And what happens when I get experience? Well, if I'm reflective, I learn lessons. And what happens if I learn lessons? Well, then I improve. So when you think about it, courage, you know, it gives me experiences, it gives me lessons, it gives me improvement. And what's the result? Confidence. I've had experiences under my belt. I've learned lessons. I've improved myself. And there are so many benefits of courage that, oh my gosh, I mean, I could do an hour on this, but let me just quickly give you four of them. There's 40 of them, but let me give you four, okay? The first benefit of courage is it gives you energy. It just does. Courage energizes a person. Once we are committed, once we do it, wow, I was talking to my friend Scott Pyle the other day, just a couple of days ago. He was talking about how he and his wife Pamela were in New Zealand, and they bungee jumped, the longest jump in the world is in New Zealand, and he talked about, you know, standing on that platform before it jumped, and, you know, the incredible fear. He said it was paralyzing almost, the fear, and he said, but the moment that I jumped, he said, all of a sudden the fears just went away, and the adrenaline and the energy and the fun part of acting on what I wanted to act on. He said all of that just began to come, and he said, you know, my body was just filled with adrenaline and with energy. Well, you show me a courageous person, I'll show you a person that has energy. That's just a fact. You show me a person that shrinks from courage and is not courageous, I'll show you a person that probably lacks that energy. You know, courage, as we've already talked about, it gives us confidence. In fact, that's the whole theme of this lesson. Courage is the gateway to confidence. And so, you know, courage is what I do. Confidence is how I feel. But what I do, what you do, determines how you and I feel. So if we do something courageous, we feel confident. We feel good about ourselves. Just like if we shrink from it, we feel bad about ourselves. So, you know, courage gives you confidence. You know, courage gives you a win. And in fact, I would say that you always get a win when you're courageous. That doesn't mean you always succeed. But when you have the courage to speak up or stand up for what is right, guess what? You win. You win even if you lose, because you did the right thing. You know, you gain the respect of others. You gain self-respect. That's a huge win for you. So courage always gives you a win. And then the fourth benefit is Courage gives others courage. I love that. Because courage is contagious. In fact, your visual expression and example of courage will encourage others. The courage you have will put courage in others. In fact, your courage will encourage others. Wow. Okay, let me just give you a quick little Bible story. It comes out of my background, obviously, and that is the you know the story of David and Goliath. And here's this kid that nobody nobody really felt was kind of warrior material, ready to run up the hill with a slingshot and a couple stones and take on the big boy. And it's a very exciting story, but I ask myself all the time, gosh, you know, what gave David confidence to go to King Saul and to the whole army of Israel to say, you know, I'll take on the big boy? Well, what gave him confidence was that he was a shepherd boy. And while he was out in the field as a shepherd, a bear came on the scene and tried, obviously, to take one of the sheep. And David, you know, practiced with the slingshot, was a good marksman, and he killed the bear. Another time, a lion tried to break in and get the sheep, and he killed the lion. And that, now, listen to this. Now, watch this. He had courage. He had courage for the bear. He had courage for the lion. And so when he's faced with Goliath, he has confidence. Now, he didn't get that confidence out of a vacuum, and he didn't get that confidence out of the fact that he went in and saw King Saul, and he laid his hands on him and said, hey, you can do this. I'm proud of you. No, no, no. He didn't get his confidence from talk. He got his confidence from action. He had the courage to do, and that courage to do gave him the confidence to do more. And when I talk about courage being absolutely contagious, if you read the story really well, this army of Israel was paralyzed by this giant Goliath. I mean, he would come out every day, and he'd look out at the army of Israel, and he would make fun of them, and he'd challenge them to come up and take him on, and they would all run to their tents, and they were all not warriors at all. They were paralyzed. But the moment that David went up the hill and he took on the big boy and he killed Goliath, the army of Israel came out of their tents and they just took care of the Philistines in a battle that didn't last very long at all. Now, what got them out of their tents? What got them out of their fearful tent life? It was somebody that had courage and confidence. And the moment that David slew the big boy, that courage that became confidence in David's life began to be acted on, and he gave the people courage themselves. Courage is contagious. It really is. I'm going to risk a little bit of time here. I'm going to just tell you a quick story that when I was a young leader, 23, and I was in my first little country church, I mean, we only had three people the first Sunday. And after I had been there for a few months, I began to, you know, have big goals and big vision. And I remember looking at my congregation. By that time, it was probably 50 people. And I began looking at them and saying, look, I said, I think the first Sunday of October, we could have 300 people. And I can tell you when I made that statement, it didn't energize the people. It scared them to death. In fact, after the service, they came up and they said, Pastor, we love your vision, but, you know, you really kind of bit off more than you can chew. We can't. You know, 300's a little bit beyond us. Well, I asked them, would you help me? And they were great country folks. They loved me. And, of course, they'd love to have 300. They just didn't think it was possible. So they said, yes, we'll help you. And, boy, they did. They helped me big time. Finally, the day comes. And right before I speak, the lay leader stood up and said, my gosh, this is a huge day. I mean, people were upstairs, downstairs. They were hanging outside the church. It was the first Sunday of October, so the windows were open so they could hear. And he said, we had 299 people. And I can remember sitting there. I didn't know the attendance until I heard it. I was seconds away from getting up and speaking. And when he said 299, I thought to myself, we missed our goal. I'm not going to allow that to happen. And I stood up and I said, look, what's our goal? 300. And I could tell those people were satisfied, 299. In fact, when they said 299, they jumped up, they cheered. They were so excited. But I wasn't excited. We were one away from 300, and I said, look, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to leave now, and you sing some music, and I'm going to go out, and I'm going to find one more person. And when I find that person, I'll bring them here, and I'll sit them down at the front, and we'll have hit our goal. And I'm telling you, those farmers, as I went down that middle aisle, they were just patting me on the back, go get them, go get them, go get them. Of course, then when I went outside, Tracy, I'm outside, and I'm saying, what the heck did I do? Oh my gosh, what am I going to do? And I looked across the street, and there were a couple of guys that I knew them both very well. You know, Sandy Burton owned a little gas station, service station over there. And he had, in fact, he had Glenn Harris beside him. They were kind of sidekicks. And I went across the street. They asked me how, you know, did you reach your goal? Because everybody in the valley knew what our goal was, because we was asking everybody in the valley to come. And they said, did you make it, you know, Pastor? I said, no, not yet. I said, I'm one away, just one away. We're at 299. I said, I got a question to ask you. Which one of you would like to be the hero in this whole valley today? Which one of you would like to go across the street and help us reach our 300? People will be talking about your chicken dinner. You were the one that, you know, took us over. And they looked at each other, and neither one of them ever had attended the church. And Sandy looked at, you know, Glenn, and he looked at Sandy, and they both kind of smiled and said, we both want to be the hero. And so Sandy, you know, put a close sign on the service station. One was on the right, one was on the left. And when I opened that door, that front door of the church, I'm telling you, those people saw me come in, and they just jumped up and down. And, you know, and I took them all the way to the front row and kicked two members off the front row and sat them down there. And I spoke, but what happened was after the message, the people were so excited that we hit our goal. And I had dozens of people come and say, you know what, John, boy, I'll never doubt God again. I'm going to believe for more. And what I saw that day was literally a transformation take place in those people's lives, because I had the courage to take action. And we've got our goal. And that night, while I was lying in bed, I wasn't sleeping. I was just rehearsing the big day. For me, it was a huge day, and I'm going through it, and I'm so pumped. I'm so happy. Can't sleep. And all of a sudden, it hit me that the power of passion, the power of courage. And what did that do for me? Well, the next time I had a big hurdle, I had a big obstacle, I didn't think of the lion and the bear. I thought of Hillham and, you know, 299 people in attendance. And you know, it changed my life. And, you know, today, you know, I'm known as a confident person. But I can tell you the pathway to confidence was courage. And let me just give you one final thought, Tracy, then I'll wrap this thing up. And that is, it began with other people believing in me, okay? You know, I some of the things I did early in my work, I didn't do them because I even maybe thought I could do them, or even maybe wanted to do them. I did them because somebody who really believed in me believed I could do them, and I didn't want to disappoint them. So here's how it sequenced. Others believed in me, and I'm grateful for that. And that's one of the reasons why every month I come on this MIM program with you, because I believe in you. I know that many of you have great potential. If we could just get the courage to, you know, go through that door and get some good experiences that will give us the confidence. So here's the process. I'll give it to you quickly. That is, others believed in me, and I believed in those who believed in me. Yeah, that was very important. They believed in me, and I believed in them, which made their belief in me much more strong. And so others believed in me. I believed in those who believed in me. So what happened is I started believing in me. And then when I began to believe in me, I believed in what I needed to do. You know, they began to give me confidence, say, well, I need to start moving. And then I looked at what I needed to do, and I believed it would not be easy. It's uphill all the way. But I also believed that if I'd start going up that hill, that my action would make me stronger, and it did. And then I believed that I would learn from my action, and I did. And then I would believe that I would be more confident after my action, and I was. That's what I want for you, my friend. But it doesn't begin with you having confidence. It begins with you having courage. The question we have to ask ourselves right now is, what is it that I haven't done that I need to do? And every one of us have something that we haven't done that we need to do. And I just want to challenge you that put it in paper. Put it on paper, what you need to do, and then get an action plan that in the next few days you're going to go do it. And be just like Tracy when she called me. And, you know, she already knew what to do, but she just was just needing, you know, her friend, her mentor's kind of encouragement and needed to maybe be validated a hair. But the point being, she did it. And trust me, she felt a lot different after the call than she did before the call. Before the call, wow, is this the right thing to do? Wow, what happens if it's not received well? Wow, what happens if the relationship kind of starts to go south? You know, what happens if, well, you know, and she was just doing that. What happens? Well, you know, after she had the courage to make the call, she knew what happened. And it made her stronger. It made her better. It made her more confident. And even if we take the action and it doesn't turn out the way it should, the very fact that we did the right thing gives us more strength. It gives us more confidence. So that's what I want for you. That's what I want for myself. And hopefully, Tracy, this lesson's just practical enough to help all of us.
Yes, it is, John. And I'm so grateful for your mentoring with me. And now look how it's helping other people. I wanted to, before we open up the call, if you can press *6, if a question has come up while John was speaking and teaching on this topic, and you press *6, you'll enter into the queue, and then we'll go through the queue. I'm curious, we may be having queue problems, so we've got some friends who have submitted some questions that I'm going to go through as well. But if you have a question, press *6 to enter the queue. Typically, our queue is flooded, and I'm curious if we bragged about our technology being on point, and I'm seeing that we might be having queue problems. So *6 to enter into the queue, my friends, and you will know when you have been unmuted because you will hear the little prompt in your ear. But, you know, John, so many questions come to mind, and I'm glad that some people had submitted them to us as well. But can you talk about, you know, you talked about fear, and I know I certainly felt that this week, but can you talk about the difference between, you know, that part where you, when you talked about the problem in the confidence cycle, and maybe that's, there isn't buy-in from the people. And so what is the how do you determine the difference between when you want to move forward in something, when you have the belief, when you want to move forward and you're passionate about it, you've got a practical plan, and what's the difference between pushing through the pushback that you get from other people who haven't maybe bought in, even if you believe it, versus pausing and being coachable to maybe see that maybe it's a blind spot? How do you determine that?
Well, it's a great question, and a lot of times it is a blind spot. So what I would suggest is put it on pause for a moment. In fact, now that I'm thinking about it, that probably should have been part of that cycle, a pause. Put it on pause for a little bit and listen to those people who are perhaps saying that, you know, maybe this isn't the thing you ought to be doing. And when you're finished listening to them and be open and, you know, let them speak into your life, because you may have a blind spot. But after you've received all their input, all of that, you still have to go inside of yourself. And at the end of that time, if you can answer the questions with integrity that I have been teachable, that I have considered their perspective, if it still is on you that this is something that you should do, then do it. Now, what I found happened is this. There are some times when I've done it, it didn't turn out right. There have been times when I've gone back to my friends and said, you know what, you were right on that one. But when did I know they were right? I didn't know right because they told me. I knew right because I experienced a setback. Mm-hmm. And I think that feedback, even with setbacks, is a very positive thing. And I don't think that it's bad or it's negative. So I think the question always when should we go forward or should we put our life on pause is this something I should do because it benefits others, or is this something I should do because it just feeds my ego? And you got to get the ego out of the way because, you know, wow, the ego can cause us to do things that we shouldn't do. But we just want to feel important. So I think you just have to put it on pause. But I've many times after listening to my friends, I just, this last fall, I had many of my friends share with me that I should not participate in an event that I felt very strongly that I should. But I listened to them, and the things they said were valid. But when I was done listening to them, I still felt that it was the right thing to do. And, you know, when you kind of wrap it all up, Tracy, we have to live with ourselves. Mm-hmm. And if I have to live with myself, I have to answer to myself, not answer perhaps to anyone else, but I got to answer to myself. And I was so glad that I did this one event, because it was a huge help and success to an awful lot of people. Mm-hmm. But I think it just put it on pause. Here's what I know. If I put it on pause to listen, that at least says that I'm willing to hear another person's perspective, and then I have a teachable spirit. Mm-hmm. Then I take it off a pause, and sometimes I take it off pause and put it on stop because I'm not going to do it. What they said made sense to me. In fact, let me just say this. If you're always going against your friend's advice, you're in trouble, mm-hmm. because you're not listening. If you always do what your friends say, you're in trouble because you're conforming.
Oh, that's good.
So there's got to be that in-between where there are times when, yeah, they've got a point. I think I'll hold it. And then the other times when you say, well, I understand what they said, but I need to go forward.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. Thank you. Thank you for that. Okay, let's see if our cue will work. Let's see.
Hi.
Oh, yay! I'm so glad. Go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah, thank you. This is CJ from United Kingdom. Firstly, thanks, John, for this opportunity to add value to my life and a lot of people around the world. I'm really grateful for that opportunity. My question is really is also has to do with courage and relationships. So it is. My question is, how do you deal with close relationships that require courage for you to change them because they don't align or add value to your future or your vision in life?
Well, I think that's a very, first of all, super question. I mean, my gosh. And the reason it's such a good question is we all have that. Everybody that's listening that's on this call right now has a close relationship that's not going. And, you know, now the question is, do I have the courage to confront that issue? Because the stakes are always high when it's a close relationship. What happens if my approach is misunderstood and all of a sudden someone that's been important to me in my life has cut me out of their life? So what I would say to you is this. If it's truly a close relationship, obviously you handle it with care. But you must handle it. And my words are always the same. I care enough for you to confront this issue. I care enough for you to bring this issue up. And when I bring it up, I always immediately establish my heart and say to them, you know, what I'm going to talk to you about is something I could be totally misinformed. I could be totally misunderstood. But we need to talk about it. I think what gets tough for me is not the initial courage to confront. I think what gets really tough for me is after I've done that and there's no progress. And I've had that. I've had it where when I'm finished talking about the issue, it's still an issue. And it's not only still an issue, but it's going to be an issue. And now I've got to ask myself, how do I handle this relationship? And what I've tried to do with loved ones like that is I've tried to still be kind and caring and unconditionally love them in that whole process. But I also at the same time have to put for lack of a better word, this is kind of cold sounding, but I've got to put a number on their head. And
Oh, wouldn't you know, we lost you for a second, John. I can see.
Okay, am I back?
Oh, you're back. You're back. Yay.
Yeah. The reason you lost me is because my hand hit the mute button. See, The man who bragged about technology is already just muted.
I am sorry I even said a word, darn it. Okay, continue your thought.
No. Hey, listen to me. If you would have told me, hey, I'd have been fat, dumb, and happy. I'd have just been still talking away, muting, and thinking, no, I'm good. You got to jump in and help somebody like me. But the point, going back to the wonderful question is, there are times when that relationship is never going to be what you would love it to be. And then you have to ask yourself, well, what do I do? And I have always felt that once I have done my best to cover a good relationship or make it what it could or should be, then I need to move on to with my life. And I don't mean that in a calloused way, but what that does mean is I'm not so sure that I should let people, even that are close to me, keep me from reaching my potential. And I certainly don't want that for them, even though maybe there's a lack of closeness to them. I don't want to keep them from reaching their potential either. So, you just, if that's just hopefully that's just some sound advice to you that'll help you in that whole process. But it's always more difficult, you have to have much more courage with people that are close to you than people that are not. That's a fact for all of us. And we all of us have that scenario in our life, no doubt.
We sure do, and I would love to ask a little follow-up to that, John. So say CJ goes to this person, and this isn't somebody in business. It's a personal relationship, and you've had the conversation, and it goes the way you described it. It doesn't go well, and you realize, okay, well, I tried it. I did the best that I could to bring maturity to this and honor them and honor the relationship. You naturally draw a boundary. But then if it gets to you that it's being processed outside, maybe in a business setting or maybe in your community, whatever this relationship is in, would you suggest that a follow-up to that would be to go and readdress it or just let it die and let whatever's being spread around and processed outside of the two of you? Do you just let that run its course and not address it?
That's a great question. And the readdress it issue is based on whether it's hurting me or it's hurting others.
Mm-hmm.
If it's hurting me, I seldom just go back and visit it. I just do. But I feel if it's damaging to others, mm-hmm. and others are being brought into it, then I will go back and readdress it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just pretty much, I've got to determine where the collateral damage is. If it's just with me, usually I just say, hey, this is a fact of life, John, and be a big boy and move on. If it's others, then sometimes, yeah, I've had to go back 2-3 times. I've had to even bring the people that were being affected by it into the room with and have the conversation with them, with that person being present, to be able to try to not heal it, but at least make it bearable so everybody can move on.
And I think that's one of the most critical things, because in business you can be a good leader,
yeah.
but then when you get into relationships outside of business, that's when really your leadership character is challenged, because you aren't in a boss role. You can be shining in your leadership position, and then when you get into relationships, it's like, oh, it's a whole nother ball game. Can get messy.
Yeah.
Thank you, CJ.
That's a great question.
That was a great question. Here we go. Let's see if this next one works. You're up. Are you there? Okay, let me try the next one. Okay, are you there?
Hi.
Oh, yay. We can hear you.
Yes. So I'm Alexander from Montreal.
Hi, Alexander.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm fine, Alexander.
John, thank you very much for who you are and for what you have accomplished. I read all your books. I'm trying to see your way of leading. Actually, we have a lot of similarities between us. So actually, my question is, that many people leave companies because of poor leadership in those companies. And actually, they don't leave companies. They leave bad managers. Those situations we have everywhere. And many people who leave those organizations, they have great ideas and they have courage. but their leaders, they just don't, they don't care. And my question is, how to convince those leaders that they lose great people?
Okay, you're going to have to help me, Tracy, just a little bit. How to help, the last part I just couldn't get.
How to convince those leaders that they lose great people?
That they lose
people? Yes, people who leave organizations with poor leadership.
Yeah, sure, I got you. No, I got it. Sure. Okay, it's a great question, and I got it. Well, the whole issue is, okay, let's say I'm losing people. I have got to, at that moment, ask myself, who am I losing and why am I losing? Now, what I've always done is I've always done an exit interview. I would Alexander, with you, I just sit down and say, okay, Alexander, talk to me. What's the reason for you to leave? Because, you may be able to help me. Maybe we're doing something wrong, and if we can correct ourselves, others won't leave. But just give me – so I always do an exit interview. What I've discovered is when you have leaders that are losing, and then I got to ask myself, who am I losing also? Am I losing the best people in my organization? Am I losing the lower 10 or 20% of people in my organization? But whenever you lose people, most people will stop and say, this is not good. Why am I doing that? When a leader doesn't self-reflect, or a leader says, well, they weren't good people anyway, and it didn't matter, and my gosh, I want to get somebody better. Well, what's pretty much happening is they're not dealing with reality. They're not dealing with the real issues. So what you do, Alexander, is you just go to them and say, do you know why the people are leaving? And almost all the time they'll give you a reason, but how do you know that reason? Did you ask them? And if they, most of the time they didn't ask. They're just assuming that they left for that reason. But you just got to be a friend with them and just pretty much say, just like when people are coming into the organization, it usually is a positive. When people are leaving the organization, often it's a negative. And just like you want to say, boy, our company is growing. Well, that's a good news. Well, our punk company is shrinking. Well, that's bad news. And again, a lot of times insecure people or people with high egos will just try to ignore that. And that may be who you're dealing with, Alexander. And if that's the case, you're probably not going to help them. They just probably don't have a teachable spirit. But if you think that by chance they are teachable, or they come to you and say, wow, we're losing people, I'm not sure why, then jump in and help them. And the first step is always to go to the person who is leaving and have an exit interview and get clarity on, why did you leave, and could I have done better? Is there something, if I changed my leadership, that would have kept you from making that decision? And we just don't like to have honest answers about ourselves, because most of the time we don't want to hear what people say, and so we have a tendency to ignore it. That's never healthy. And it just doesn't work. You can't ignore your way to success. It's all downhill that way. So you gotta, if at all possible, bite the bullet, suck it in, be a big boy, be a big girl, and go ask the hard questions and find out.
But boy, that is a time when we have to have courage, because it takes courage to ask those questions and hear what they might say back.
It sure does.
Yep, that's a great question. Here we go to the next one.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon, John and everyone. This is Alame from New York.
Hi.
So my question is, hi, if you don't have enough courage, I don't know if it was just confidence to do what you want to do, or you feel that God wants you to do, can you give us suggestions to ignite courage or to take the first step or the first action?
Are you asking to help somebody with the first step of courage?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I walk
No, how do you ignite courage when, I feel like God wants me to do something, but I don't have the confidence, the courage to do it, and to just get over the first step? Do you have any suggestion?
Sure. Yeah, I love what you're saying. I think I don't have the courage to to do this. Well, that's a healthy thing to say, okay, I'm coming up short here. So look at what you want to accomplish and ask yourself why you lack courage. What seems to be my hesitation? Okay. Stay with that long enough to kind of pinpoint it. Sometimes you just would like to have somebody be with you. And so it may be asking a friend to kind of, would you walk with me through this? I'm a little hesitant, but if you'll walk with me, I think I would be more prone to do it. Sometimes it's the very fact that you lack courage because, or lack the confidence because you just have never done it before. But here's what I know. Here's what I know. There is nothing better than taking a step of action to cure all the problems of inaction. Nothing better. You can't think your way into it. You can't talk your way into it. You've got to act your way into it. And my brother and I, when we were younger, we used to go to the pool and it was colder than what we liked sometimes. And Larry would just stick his foot in and then shiver a while. And I just dove in. I just said, I'm going to have 30 seconds of cold and then I'm going to be okay. And I would just say to you that if you'll take action on what you fear, 9 out of 10 times, not 10 out of 10, I'm your friend, but 9 out of 10 times, once you dive in there, you look at yourself and say, man, that was an overinflated fear. And the moment you do that, you break that fear barrier. So the next time when you have that fear, you say, well, the last time it was overinflated, boom, I'm going to try it again. And the more, of course, that you try it, the more courage you get, and the more confidence that you have that they play together.
I love that. That is true, 9 out of 10 times. And even when you've talked about, even when it's a failure, it's still a win, that's true too. Because if you dive in that 1 time out of 10 that you're like, oh, that I should have listened to that, then we start learning to that inner voice. And that I would love to know, John, do you have a process? Because in my mind, fear screams and faith is a quiet whisper. And so do you have like a process of how to quiet the fear so that you can really hear what's happening rather than the fear that's kind of filling your head almost like static?
Well, I acknowledge it. I just say I'm fearful. And there's something about fear does its best when it intimidates me. That's the strength of fear, is it intimidates. And so if I cowardly, or if I just don't talk about it, or I hold it within me, it just grows. Now I'm feeding my fear because it's a bully. So the first step is when you have the fear is you just sit down with people who truly love you and say, I've got a fear here. My gosh, I know what I should do, but I don't want to do it. And what I've discovered is the moment you talk about it, you begin to expose it, it begins to reduce. And that's why sometimes, Tracy, people, they talk about it and then they talk about it some more, because what they're doing is they're starting to take the edge off of what fear is. Now, you can't talk it out. You can't think it out. You've got to act it out. And so there comes a time when you still got to jump. You got to jump. But by all means, I think admitting fear is something that's healthy, because we all have it. And at the moment that we admit it, we can now deal with it. The moment we can deal with it, we can do something about it. Does that make sense?
Yes. And when you said, I mean, I hope we all on the call really settled in on that little golden nugget in there when you said you can't talk it out. It has to be action. Because it kind of ties into the parenting, but in all areas of life, no matter what decision we're making, so many times the people who we're leading want to talk it out and talk every angle and talk. And sometimes we just need to jump. Oh, I love that. I think that's a great thing, a great lesson to end on. John, thank you for a year of adding value to us. What a great call this has been. What an incredible year this has been. My friends, I cannot encourage you enough to go back and review your year alongside of these notes. That's really taking this mentoring and really layering it, but laying your life alongside of the lessons and seeing what did you learn, what did you apply, what did you change in your life, how did this add value to you, so that you can, as you're assessing your life, seeing how this mentoring is really becoming such a big part of how we interact, whether it's personally or professionally. And what a gift, what value it is that we get live time with John Maxwell every month. So John, thanks again so much. I know my life, my business, personally and professionally, is infinitely better because of your influence, and we just so appreciate you. Don't ever think that you are not completely appreciated by all of our friends on MIM. Can I just tell you, grab your friends. As you're assessing your year and you're sharing it with people and what you've learned and how this year has been such an incredible season of growth for us, share with them the value of MIM. Bring your friends. You know, friends don't let friends stay stagnant. And so bring your friends to come and join us. I know I'm constantly talking to friends and family members, like what I learned on my, you know, Maximum Mentoring Impact call, and sharing that with people so that we can bring them along with us. Because what? If we want to go fast, far, we go alone. Fast, we go alone. If we want to go far, we bring others. Happy New Year, and we'll see you then. Take care, everybody.